This is Digging Deeper, a podcast from UCEM. Each episode, we will discuss a different area of what the institution does and invite internal and sometimes external guests to share their thoughts. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome all. My name is Andrew Belt. I'm UCM's PR and social media manager. And in this episode of Digging Deeper, we will be discussing sustainability. I'm joined by three guests. We have Rebecca Thurman, an apprentice quantity surveyor at ARUP, which is a firm of designers, planners, engineers, architects, consultants, and technical specialists. I think that's covered all of the team. Rebecca is currently studying on our chartered surveyor apprenticeship on the quantity surveying pathway. So welcome.
Hello.
And how are you?
I'm really good. Yeah, really enjoyed today.
That is good. Also in the room, we have Harry Bowen, who is also from ARUP. And is an apprentice project manager and studies on our Chartered Survey apprenticeship on the project management pathway. So
yes,
welcome.
Indeed. Yes, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. Yeah. How are you doing? All good?
No, it's good, yes. And a good opportunity to be representing ARUP for UCM, really. So yeah. Thank you.
And both from the same office in yeah. Birmingham as well. So, two for one we have today. And last but not least, we have Antonia Lindsay. Antonia is a research assistant within UCM's Research, Innovation and Partnerships team and specialises in sustainability. So how's it going? All good?
Thank you. Yeah. Been a good day.
Been a good day. So you're talking about today, and this podcast is all about sustainability. We are at the end of the first day of UCEM's NUS Responsible Futures re-accreditation, something Antonia's been working very hard on. So if you haven't heard about what Responsible Futures is, Antonia, could you please let us know a little bit more about it?
Of course. So Responsible Futures is a programme run by the NUS, and it looks at the kind of institutional approach to sustainability. So we got accreditation 2 years ago, and every 2 years you're up for revalidation. So it's a kind of bank of 4 to 5 criteria that look at how we embed sustainability. So that's within the formal curriculum, but also institutionally. So things like policies and marketing and things like that.
And Antonia wasn't reading off a script there. She just knows all of that off the top of her head. Very, very impressive. Well, it's been many months in the planning, hasn't it? So how long ago was it that you were starting? I think as soon as you joined UCEM.
In June.
Yeah.
It was the kind of first and big project that I've been working towards. So
nearly there. Just one more day to go. But, so, you know, one of the questions I got here is why do you think UCM being an NUS Responsible Futures accredited institution matters? Why should we be doing this?
I think it focuses our institutional efforts for sustainability. So it's becoming more of a kind of flashy buzzword that everybody wants to talk about. But that also means that it's very difficult to know what to do and how to do things right. So the NUS Responsible Futures Toolkit kind of focuses your efforts in 8 different themes that kind of helps you target different teams within the institution and allows kind of everybody to work a bit more collaboratively. And it's great to be able to get students in. As an online university, it's really difficult to kind of portray what we do in the office and institutionally. So it's great to have people come in and be able to see firsthand what we're doing and interact with our employees and just kind of get a bit more of a feel for what we do.
And it is different for us, like you say, as an online institution, we're not. We tend to see students at the end with graduation, but in the meantime, you know, it's unless you're an apprentice, which, you know, Rebecca and Harry, you both are, so you have the face-to-face workshops.
Yeah. But we say VLE, so all of our modules are through VLE, so it's just literally a computer screen. So we don't see, we speak to the tutors, we speak to in forums, but we don't see all of this extra work that goes on behind the scenes. A chance to come here and meet some of these people is really, really good.
Actually, a chance to come to the university and see what it's like around that sort of thing. It's interesting, really. It is interesting.
No, I think it's great whenever students do you know, have a tour around here or whatever, and just to see, you know, it's not just some bloke who's counting the money coming in, you know, it's what, 200 employees here, and really kind of complex as well. I don't know if you have had a tour around here, but
I might have to get one tomorrow.
Yeah, well worth doing. Yeah,
I might be back for another 18 months.
Yeah, well worth sort of doing and sort of just seeing all the different teams. It is quite eye-opening, I think. But it's also an interesting thing on the responsible futures front, because we were the first online institution.
And still are the only online institution that have got accreditation. So it does make things slightly more interesting for us, because lots of the examples and all of the kind of case studies and things are from traditional universities. So it does make us need to think a little bit more outside the box and how to meet some of the criteria. But yeah, I think having students come in at the end definitely makes it worth all the hard work.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah, it's good to see. Like I say, we don't see all too often. So how has the first day gone
it's been
as
really
well?
Good, I think it's a strange one for us. Obviously, a lot of work has gone in at the back end of it. And then we have to kind of hand that off to students who we've only met today. So it's a bit of a strange one, not to be kind of part of hearing what you're saying. It's kind of that talking about the work behind closed doors. But no, it's been an exciting day. And I think there's a lot of excitement to come tomorrow with the students being able to meet some more staff members and have and meeting the principal and things. So that'll be a good one.
Mm. And then with the online sort of bit, sorry, that's my throat there. We do have students coming from various locations as well. So we got Rebecca and Harry here from Birmingham. I think Jason's from Cornwall. Yeah. He's arrived from. So what other locations?
Sunderland.
Wow.
Yeah. One not too far away. I can't remember where she's
Maidenhead.
Says.
Maidenhead. Yeah. So we've got some close to home. And some.
A bit further afield.
Representative of England then, I suppose. Whilst, you know, obviously other universities, you'd all be based there.
Yeah.
So.
And then we've got a focus group of students tomorrow as well, and they're from all around the world. So that'll be a good to kind of represent our kind of international student base.
Hmm. And is that online,
That
bit? Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to be a Zoom meeting. So I think we've got 12 at the moment who have signed up. So, yeah, that'll be a good one to kind of see what students from all over the place with different attitudes and things, how they kind of perceive what we do.
And that's really important, because I think it's about 35% of our student base is international as well. So whilst we've got our group of, what is it, nine of you who are here today from various parts of England, you know, to also have those from abroad giving their opinions will certainly help and be a proper representation of the student base. So are you confident? One more day to go?
That's a big question. I hope so.
It'll be fine.
Well, that's good. So Rebecca's telling us it'll be fine. So there we are. There's your exclusive. And then, yeah, Rebecca and Harry, I mean, obviously Antonia's been working on this since June, as you've said just back then. You know, how did you get involved in the reaccreditation, and when was the first kind of contact you had, and what's the process been up until now for you?
It was more an email from UCM. I think it was maybe from you, Antonia, just a brief description of what it is and what it's all about, and mainly just sustainability, trying to help UCM become more sustainable to get this reaccreditation. And it was quite interesting, and just went from there, just asking for more information and gathering all the information. And it seemed like something that I wanted to just get involved in, be involved in something that will help the future or help represent the university that I'm going to on the larger scale, really, against, as you say, not some of the traditional universities, not all the online ones, really. So that's sort of where I got involved, or why I sort of wanted to sort of be part of it, really.
And the same, I mean, we had an email and we had to kind of a quick response of what we think sustainability is and why we're so passionate, a couple of sentences. And, you know, I think people can talk about it quite a lot, but you've got to kind of have that passion there as well. And I think after coming here today, especially speaking to every kind of member of staff, and when we did a little interview earlier, everyone really seems to be on board. And I kind of thought, what I said in my email to apply for this, is kind of what is happening here at the uni as well. So it all kind of links together.
That's really positive. It's good to hear. And was that independently? Did you know each other before?
So me and Harry do our study days together.
Okay, yeah.
To try and make it like a classroom environment because everything is distant learning.
And that works a lot better.
Yeah,
doing
we find
doing it
we can
way.
Motivate each other as well. Mm-hmm. And ARUP's really, really good for, you know, giving us our study time and encouraging us to do it together.
Providing support as well when needed. Because as you said earlier, we have a wide variety of different sectors and stuff. So all modules, whatever we do, if someone in our group doesn't know what they know, who to point us in the direction to, or an area of pointing someone in the structures team, for example. And I think that's really helped us anyway. Yeah. Get through the modules and get through assignments and exams.
So I think, I went to my line manager and they were really for, you know, taking this new experience on board and actually coming to the university. And I kind of just said to Harry, look, I've applied. And he was like, yeah, we'll apply as well. And we can both come here and, you know, we've met a big group of people as well, but we're still obviously representing ARUP and how good the course is and what we can talk about going forward. So.
Have you had a chance to speak much to the other students so far, or has it been?
It's been quite a mix. I mean, we haven't sat next to each other in the group today because we kind of thought, you know, we're both from ARUP.
we know each other. We want to get to know other people, and a lot of other people there are not all apprentices. Yeah. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Waiting for some results.
But one's waiting for some results. One's on the accelerated route, which is a completely different route to what we're taking. So it's good to see where different people have come in and different courses. So quite a few are on the QSing route, and fortunately there's not many on the project management route, but that's fine really.
nice to sort of see a few of your peers and and then you'll see them again hopefully what couple of years time is it?
Couple of them mainly.
With the nice green sashes rather, which were which were brought in for apprenticeships. And then have you learnt anything today which you didn't know about UCM? Has that come across?
So, we've obviously had to carry out an audit today. So we've had to obviously be scoring the sustainability measures that take place at the uni. And kind of like what depth it goes into. So, you know, people can talk about sustainability, like reduce plastic, you know, to walk to work instead. But there's so much more outside that box that we've had to look at evidence-based that you've had to submit for the audit.
The stuff that happens behind the scenes, not the stuff that you can always see, the building's BREEAM rating, but what's gone in to maintain that, like the facilities manager that we spoke to, how she's very passionate about the building, but how it's maintained and how she wants to have all the assets that UCM own, not just this office. What other assets do they own, and how can they continuously improve them?
And I think it's all the sectors coming together. Mm-hmm. So the meeting we had earlier today, you know, there was five members of staff present, and every single member of staff from every single department was all on the same, you know, sustainability, but we pull in from everyone else. So no one's doing it on their own. So it's really good to see that all together.
The one focus of they're all enthusiastic and they know that people are around them to help, where I can imagine some organisations or some universities may not have that cooperation or teamwork that UCM have shown today that they have. I'm not sure if they're just showing us for the audit and for this at all. By next week, they won't talk to each other ever again. But
there's definitely been some good bonds over the kind of core values of sustainability for sure.
Yeah, and that is the case. I mean, sustainability is huge here. And I think it's just got bigger and bigger. Yeah. I've not really... I don't know if it's because of the time and later, you know, when I started work, it was sort of 2013, but my previous employers, there was nothing on it at all. And then since joining UCEM, I've suddenly learned a lot more myself from it as well. So... I can confirm that it wasn't just one of these rehearsals to find out.
Just happened for the day, then back to normal.
We were all reading sustainability, off a board or something. So
I think it's just because obviously before I came to this 2-day workshop, I thought, I better have a look at what ARUP are doing with sustainability, and they've got the nation's sustainability goals, and it's the same in your company you know those. Coloured icons were familiar to me, and they must be obviously across the UK or globally or wherever, but you know, everyone's dipping in here and there. So it's good that everyone's on the same path.
Definitely growing and certainly becoming a much bigger part of UCM than it even was when I first joined.
It's like a natural behaviour now as well. Mm-hmm. It's not going to have to be forced.
So. Yeah. It's becoming part of the culture of workplaces and universities and places like this. It's not just something you're forcing people to do. It's people have grown up with it and they're going to continue this on, hopefully, anyway. And I think that's where definitely this reaccreditation comes from, making it a culture within the university, not just a two-day thing then goes back to normal.
and then it's not just the university but the sector as well. I mean, our trustee Amanda Clack, she wrote a little article recently which basically stated the fact that one in six houses end up the materials going into landfill, you know, and that's just eye-opening. So sort of learning these lessons, finding out more, embedding it in the learning resources which are being taught, you know, hopefully just, you know, have that effect upon the entire sector and everyone will all know what they can do to make a difference, really. Mm-hmm. But that's just, you know, the accreditation is one of the things. You know, Antonia, that's a big part. That is your role, really, is the sustainability side of things. And, you know, you joined us. Was it June you joined us? Yeah. So as soon as you joined us, it was straight into the reaccreditation work.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slower kind of journey into it. So, yeah, second day was World Environment Day. So that was a good one to kind of jump in straight into. Slightly daunting, needing to have all of this sustainability knowledge on hand on day two, but it was a good chance to kind of show my face and link it with the sustainability work that we do, and that's kind of been what I've been working towards, really. I think there's a lot of really good things that have gone on at UCM in terms of sustainability, but it's just getting that, pulling it all together into one central place. So for the accreditation last time, Al had worked mainly on his own. Obviously, his team was much smaller then, and so there wasn't as much bandwidth to kind of go out and be able to interact with as many different teams as we have now. So that's kind of been a bigger team, bigger reach to just pull everybody's good ideas together, really.
And when you joined, what was your impression of what was being done already? Did you see that there was a lot more work to do, or just a case of taking it a bit further?
Taking it a bit further. I think it's mentioned quite a lot that a lot of people come to UCM to work for the sustainability aspect of it, and I think that's definitely true for me, that the idea of moving down south and working for a big company and my kind of sustainability head saying, oh, I don't know how much I like that idea, of that kind of really fast-paced and, you know, just a very different kind of life. But here it's not that, and it's everything is so carefully considered, and it's not a kind of wasteful environment, and things do need to have a kind of thought behind it and a purpose, and that's kind of, it makes my day to day easier in terms of my job, but also that's kind of makes me more comfortable in the company that I work for, that I kind of believe what they stand for. So
certainly helps, that's for sure. I mean, I remember you mentioned the World Environment Day, and I remember actually having first conversation with you when you joined, and it was and you were saying about how you thought that there was a lot of nice green spaces in Reading, and I think I was a bit like, really? I know it's quite built up, but obviously you go by the canal and places like that. So
right on the river, so I think that's being able to get up every day and walk past all of the swans and stuff. It makes a big difference to the kind of thought of moving to central London, where there's not as much kind of unstructured green spaces, I suppose. I think coming from Glasgow, there's a lot of just open space that's not landscaped and gardened, and I think that's really important to have people be able to just enjoy space as green, open space that you can kind of do what you want in, rather than kind of having prescribed gardens and parks that are very kind of prescriptive.
And you still agree that Reading's quite a green place as well, but
it's not as green as it could. It's more green than some places I've been, for sure.
There's a few good parks. And then your background in sustainability and kind of what got you interested in the first place and then wanted to pursue a career in sustainability.
I suppose I've always had an interest in sustainability. Always quite enjoyed geography and things at school. And that was not a huge focus, but it was part of it, and the same at university. So I went on to do a geography and sociology degree, and it was more the social aspect to sustainability that I am really interested in, more than the kind of environmental side. But yeah, so all just kind of, it wasn't necessarily a planned move. Kind of saw this job and it seemed to kind of suit me and what was important to me. And so kind of went for it, and it's turned out to be a really good fit. But I wouldn't have said that it was necessarily a kind of decisive move to, like, you know, pursue sustainability as a career. It just seems to have worked out quite nicely.
Yeah, couple your passion for sustainability with something you can do in the workplace, which makes a difference as well. So
I think it's hard because it wasn't necessarily a career path that was around that long ago.
Yeah.
And even now, it's not necessarily a defined career path. It's kind of still developing, and sustainability teams are, in some companies, are just being formed now, and in, you know, companies that have had them for a while, they're definitely growing. So it is a kind of dynamic industry. So I wouldn't have, I wouldn't necessarily have known to pick it as a kind of career choice.
Hmm. And I think the growth is an interesting point, because I chatted to our sustainability tutor, Brian Quinn, earlier this week, and he said that his interest in sustainability was in his teenage years. I won't give away how old he is, but at the time, there was just no sustainability courses at university. He said there were a few very niche ones, and they were all far too expensive, he said, at the time, so he went off and did something else. But it's kind of gone full circle, and now he's able to, you know, demonstrate his passion and his knowledge for sustainability by, you know, teaching solely on that subject. And that's a big move for us, because he's our first tutor who is specifically focusing on that as well. So it's definitely grown massively, and I think people are far more aware, and as an industry and workplace, it's something which will continue to be vital, essentially. I mean, I asked Antonia about why you got interested in sustainability. I mean, same question to, you know, Rebecca and Harry. You know, what was it that got you interested in sustainability in the first place?
I just think, as a generation now, you know, there's a lot of social media involvement, there's a lot of press involvement, and I think, you know, if they can get that right message across to the generations that are reading the news on their phones more, or that are seeing, I don't know, celebrities or empowered people talking about this, I really think these are the people who can make this difference now, because things aren't going to happen overnight. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. But I think if we're giving that message now and a lot more people are involved, I think it's going to be easier over the years, like being aware of it. You know, when I was at school, not going to say when again, giving the age of Agnes. No, when I was at school, wasn't a long time ago, I've left school 10 years now. You know, you used to know about, like, renewable energy and this and that, but there wasn't a massive, like you say, with the courses, there wasn't a big talk about it. And, you know, only, say, 6 or 7 years ago did we get a recycle bin at home that you had to split your recycling, and everyone was like, what? You have to put the cans somewhere else, you know, like, it wasn't all in the same bin. So I think now that everyone can get more involved, especially at a younger age, I think that will really, that's quite a passion. And companies like Arup, you know, in the built environment, if they can have that when they're doing these new projects or refurbs, I think that also really helps.
So, yes, just the exposure of getting to the younger generations as becoming a culture, as becoming a normal thing. Because as you said, when we were at school, it was just renewable energy, solar, wind farms and stuff. And they were always quite expensive, big things. Not everybody can do that. So it was always something that only expensive people can, rich and expensive people can do. Yeah. And the politicians can only do what they can. But nowadays people are becoming more aware that if everybody does even a little bit, it all adds up.
Yeah.
So if everybody on the street starts recycling everything that they can, that's one street helping it, then if it just multiplies from there on, it does add up, really. And I think that's where it is, trying to get more people involved and just trying to keep adding to those numbers, really.
I also think older generations...
more set in their ways, I think.
Yeah, but I think they have a massive impact as well, you know. I think they obviously want the future for their children, their grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, mm-hmm. whatever, you know. And I think they can also influence that, you know, no one lives forever, but I think older generations can really make a change for the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years of their life and support, you know, what we're trying to do as a younger generation maybe, or what companies are trying to do as well.
Mm. That's the main thing, making sure there's something there for the future. Yeah. I know nothing might really happen in my time on this planet or I don't know if we'll ever go to another planet or not in my time, but yeah, will there be something there for my children, my grandchildren, and so on and so forth? Will there be anything, or will we have to be forced out of this and go somewhere else, or have to go to some proper drastic measures? But I highly doubt that will happen. Hopefully, now that everybody's becoming a lot more aware of it, and it's going in the right direction, I would say at the moment. And as I've said, if everybody starts chipping in the small little bit, it will add up, basically.
Mm. I mean, our sustainability tutor, when he was talking about how he got into it and where his focus has gone, he says since becoming a dad, he's got a three-year-old child. He says, you know, seeing these videos of animals which are becoming extinct, and he's saying, I want my child to see those animals and that ecosystem and the world I see. And so he's kind of saying it's for my children and grandchildren and all this kind of...
Yeah, I experienced something that I enjoyed or I remembered quite vividly. I don't want that to just go away because of something that we can easily stop or put legislation involved or something like that. So, yeah, I quite relate to...
So it's a really good and powerful way of putting it across as well. I mean, you talk about older generations, you know, there's Sir David Attenborough, who's a really big exponent of sustainability.
I think his programmes...
they're amazing.
I watch them on repeat.
That kind of David Attenborough effect, when he talks about things, demonstrative.
He shows you change. Parts of the world that you know you might not ever see, and if we carry on, we won't see anymore. Yeah. You know, so
we were talking about those animals. So it really sort of vividly shows that, and he's doing that. I think as well, there was some 90-year-old something for Extinction Rebellion when they were doing that, and there was a bit of sort of media spotlight on that person as well. So it's you know, young people are not alone.
For us and future generations, you know.
It's funny though; it's a kind of cycle, isn't it? That you know, maybe our parents' generation aren't quite as forward, but then some really are.
Yeah.
But the generation above that is that kind of. So I know, especially with my grandparents, that kind of make do and mend and. Don't be wasteful, because, you know...
Waste not, want not,
and
all.
Yeah. And I think that's coming back into fashion.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a really good time for kind of cross-generational learning, that, you know, at one point we did go through a war where we didn't have things, and now we're going, we've got too much stuff and we want to rein that back in, and they're the people that we need to be learning from. They're the people that lived it and they didn't have a choice. And they made the most of it, and kind of, I think there's something really powerful to be learned from older generations, and I think that there is something that needs to be said about younger generations being able to interact and inform, and we have so much more access to information than any other generation before us, and I think that's a kind of scary thing for older generations, that they don't necessarily kind of understand how we... get the information so quickly, you know.
Yeah.
You could be having a conversation and not know the answer, and within 5 minutes you've Googled and you know the answer, and you can kind of use that to inform your discussion. So I think that, I think a lot of people always say, well, it's a generational thing, but I think that there is a lot to be said about not seeing it as a generational thing and just taking different bits of learning from each generation to kind of move that, you know, move the sustainability agenda forward.
And taking on that mindset as well, you know, you probably stop yourself buying too many clothes or things like that, that kind of consumerist kind of attitude, which everything is there. If you've got the money, you can go out and buy, you know, you can have your wardrobe on Cribs, and that's quite an old reference, but, you know, with like, you know, 100 pairs of your, you know, shoes, which you might wear once, you know, that kind of thing. And actually, you know, taking on those lessons from wartime, where everything mattered and every object and, you know, piece of clothing you owned.
I think a lot of things are too readily available as well, you know.
Mm.
You can order something and it'd be with you within, same day delivery. Same day. Or,
yeah.
You know, you can go into the shop and you can get that pair of shoes in 5 different colours. You know, there's a lot of choice these days, and I think we're kind of spoiled in a sense, where they didn't, you know, there wasn't that choice.
Well, back then they didn't have that choice. You had what you had, and that was it.
We are spoiled.
So I think, sometimes it's kind of, you know, standing back and going, do I need that thing? Yeah. Does everything need to be same-day delivery, and looking at the impact on the roads with all these huge Amazon lorries going every day in a race against time to get it to that person.
And people moaning when their delivery is a couple of minutes late.
So, different challenges, that's for sure. Going back to sort of the responsible futures thing, which you've been helping us with and auditing us from today, have you had any previous experience of getting involved in sustainability initiatives, either, you know, professionally or personally?
Within Arup, yes. So, as I say, Becky just touched upon the UN Sustainability Development Goals. So I was part of the team that sort of helped implement them into not our whole system, but just our part of our system that helped document what goals we're achieving and to what extent. So we all know that many of our projects are doing them because we are a very sustainable company. We've abided by the UN Sustainability Goals ever since they came out, really. But it's just trying to document them, and as the reaccreditation of this, try and show the world that we are doing something, and to show that each project is having a little impact on something, like if it's number 17, 16, or whatever numbers they are having a slight impact. And all those projects now can be documented and reviewed and show, well, we are covering them all across the whole company, not just our team are only looking at three or four, because maybe the projects only fit into those, but Becky's QS team might be looking at the other ones that we might not be. So that's
integrating it across the different disciplines.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't personally. But there is a new scheme at work where it's the lift share. So obviously we're having a few car park issues anyway. So we thought, why not turn this around and, you know, make an impact? So there's a new scheme where we're allocated a couple of parking days and then we lift share. You find a buddy on the app, and you scan each other, and you know, people are lift sharing 5 days a week now, and
lift share public
work.
Transport, walking, cycling,
buses. And I think, you know, just lift sharing with that one person, so there's, instead of two cars on the road now, it's only one, and you know, the whole of the office is involved in doing that. And I think even something small, but something that we've had to change as a company, you see less cars in the car park. People are socialising more as well, like having a conversation on the way to work, or even cycling or running to work, because we've upgraded our changing rooms to make that more attractive. And I think just something little, like everyone start lift sharing, is one step to,
I think that's also helps on sort of like work-life balance as well, and mental health, and going into that side of things, because people have to lift share with someone, they
you
might,
have to go with that
you
person.
Have to go with whoever.
So it's not a choice of who.
You can't stay in the office at 7 and then come back at 7 the next morning.
If you're
morning,
the passenger, you have to go with the driver unless you want to walk home or get the bus home, sort of thing.
So it's like you do your hours
and you go home. Some people might do a bit at home or a bit at home, which is their choice. But most of the time, I think it has helped set people to working in their hours and not try and overstress themselves, overwork themselves, which I think has helped people come in, do their hours, go home, and I think it has probably improved people's work-life balance and mental health over the course of when we implemented it, really.
Sounds a great initiative. I mean, here we've got a staff incentive scheme for how you get in. So when we first moved to this building in the centre of Reading, we got loans if we decided to either travel by bus or use a bike to get into work. So more sustainable methods of travel. And that's continued to this day, basically. And the amount of cyclists, I couldn't count on two hands, basically. There are plenty. And same thing with changing rooms as well. And like you say, it's certainly a talking point, particularly, you know, the cyclists are pretty keen. They like to talk about their latest bike and all this kind of stuff. And it's been a really good initiative. It's made me stop driving into work, and I now get the bus in. And I often see colleagues at the bus stop and sometimes talk to them. So, all the time, hopefully. Depending how the day has been. So, It's just like that. And I mean, you say about the car share, Rebecca, yeah. is just makes me immediately think of Peter Kay. And that, yeah. that's a, you know.
Yeah, there's a sign yeah. in the reception, and it's a really bad image of Peter Kay and Adele. Like, it doesn't look like them at all, but you know it's the Peter Kay car share, and yeah, hilarious sketch.
So get a little camera in a few of those cars, yeah, and that could be quite a powerful marketing tool.
Gordon and
powerful karaoke.
Yeah, exactly. The you know, there's so many options.
Yeah, but no, it's good because, like I say, you integrate the office as well. So I don't know, so and so works in a certain team, and you're like, oh, so what do you do? And you're like, I could do with having you in my team, you know. So. The integration of ARUP, because there's so many different sectors that also promotes that too. So
much money on not driving to work as well. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Less petrol. Yeah. All good. And then just in terms of the apprenticeship you're doing with us and with ARUP, I mean, how are you finding that?
Really sad to say, but I really love it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's great.
First 6 months to be like, yeah, it was very stressful, difficult. We were like, what have we got ourselves into? Because we both came from backgrounds where we've never done any distance learning like this before, and it was very daunting, really, in terms of what are we gonna do with this?
Answer this question when we haven't even met our tutor, and he's only done one webinar. Like, how are we going to do this?
Getting used to that structure was very, very scary. But I think after the first year, definitely two years in now, we're three and a half years in. It's become second nature now. We know what to expect. We know what we're doing, and we know how everything's going to be presented to us, and we know how we're meant to present what they want in terms of assignments, exams, and how we're meant to interact with them, which very much helps now.
Yeah. And I think as well, so when I left college, I went and worked for 4 or 5 years. So I then kind of almost a late start to the whole uni kind of life. But, you know, you look at the course and you speak, there's WhatsApp groups, there's forums, and you speak to people. And not everyone is this straight out of college, 18-year-old kind of person, you know. There's no kind of, you can't do it. And at any age, I mean, we've got people in my department, at ARUP that are doing masters through UCM, like conversion courses. So it's so broad, and there's no kind of note, you're not allowed to do that. And I think everyone, I'd 100% recommend it if anyone wanted a career change or to expand their learning. Distant learning is
I think it is good, because we get with all the WhatsApp group chats, as you mentioned, we get so many different inputs from people. Yeah. Not just, as we mentioned, just in the UK, but all across the world. Yeah. Like speaking to, I can't remember what country in Africa, but some in Africa, some in Hong Kong, and all sorts across the world. And it's just interesting to see other people's point of view in the built environment or construction world, really, what they do, basically. And it is interesting. As you say, I would recommend it, because you can fit it around your schedules, and because everything's recorded as well. I think that helps me definitely with, because I have dyslexia sometimes. It's if it was all just live and trying to write notes, I might have missed something or a bit slow to process stuff. Because they're recorded, I can go over them as many times as I want, which I find brilliant, really. So when it comes to assignments or exams, I'm not just going off my notes that I might have missed something. Yeah. I can go back to
every week's study,
which I think's brilliant, to be perfectly honest.
You know, people say, oh, what uni are you at? And you know, they're, oh, yeah, yeah, so did you go to the uni? I'm like, no. No, it's on my laptop. And they kind of look at me like, oh, okay. And I'm like, no, but honestly, like, this is the VLE, this is what I did. They're like, oh, right, okay, you know.
Yeah. So I think it has improved over the years. We've seen it change for the better in terms of the VLE and the interaction, I think. Because at the start, I don't think it was too interactive. Very good for the students, but I think definitely now it has improved for us. So I think anybody who is thinking of joining, it's going to be good.
So yeah, final year coming up, I feel confident. So
good. And then, like I say, the green sash and that day when you get your name pulled out. They are brilliant, the graduations. Yeah, there's two every year, June and December, they're just, for us, like I say, it's just so nice to actually see all the students.
I think as well, because it's not, our format isn't traditional uni format, we still have that same finish that normal uni have. So I think that's nice, because you know, you feel like you've accomplished the whole degree then as well. So yeah, really, really excited for that.
Yeah, not long left.
keep going.
Work 5 days a week.
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Well, we can send you some resources if you want. The other day, but. I mean, if you really want. So, and then, you know, just another question about going back to, I suppose, to sustainability. I mean, what do you think the sector does well, and where do you think it needs to improve, would you say?
I think the BREEAM. I mean, mm-hmm. A couple of modules now that's come up, and we're learning about it more, and you hear kind of the word around the office.
Considerable construction, I think that's yeah. the company as well. That's very good, because it's a very distinct logo with the green tick.
Yeah.
So once you see that, you know that construction site is trying to be sustainable. Yeah. They're meeting the regulations and legislation that sets it. You think, yeah, it might look like a muddy, horrible site, but they're trying to do their best with what they've got, really.
Yeah, and so I think good. As well, like with this building, this wasn't a new build. This was a refurb, and it's still got a real good BREEAM rating. So I think, you know, the cities are already mm-hmm. there. Like, you know, your buildings in London, your buildings in Birmingham City Centre, a lot is already there. So I think, you know, taking a building and converting it into, like, renovating it into something that's just as sustainable as it would with a new build, I think that's something that the built environment do well, because, you know, you don't have the space to throw up a new building. But I think you can work with what you've got and, you know, save costs, save time, and make it just as sustainable.
Yeah, I sort of agree and disagree with that in some way. But I agree that they're doing it for the commercial side in what UCM have done with this. But in terms of the residential side, they could turn quite a lot of buildings into potentially flats. Like, you live in a flat in Reading and stuff, and some of the old ones in Birmingham could be renovated instead of constantly just going to greenbelt land in rural areas. Yeah. Digging up all this land and just building houses on it.
Yeah.
And most of them are potentially near floodplains, on floodplains, mm-hmm. and we've got so many problems with flooding at the moment, and people are looking at the government to try and do stuff, and it has to come from the powers of above, which is them, but everything's affecting if we're building on green belt and green land that was soaking up all this water. Now we have tarmac that's an impermeable material that water can't go anywhere. It has to go somewhere, really, doesn't it? It has to go somewhere. So it's one of those. So we are doing it, but we need to do it in the whole of the area, not just like the commercial side, but we need to do it residential and both, and sort of combine it into one.
Yeah. But obviously, there's always room for improvement in lots of things. You know, you can always do something a little bit better, like better design. And I think, you know, doing things locally, materials, workforce, you know, that's a big in my assignments, that's always been a big point of sustainability, you know, use local workforce, use local materials. So I think you can always be a bit better in doing that and designing better, but always room for improvement.
I think I read an article about recyclable bricks. So that was using old material. I think it was Edinburgh Napier University who were part of that project. I remember putting that out on social, and there was a lot of a buzz about that, really.
Yeah.
And if we could start to use more materials like that, then it'd be fewer than one in six, which would be using, you know, wasteful material in house building as well. So, plenty to discuss with sustainability. We've gone through a lot of, you know, the responsible futures, things like that. Just to finish the podcast, I'm just going to run through a few quick fire questions, a couple sustainability, a couple random, and just go around the table. Just a few one-liners, really. So beginning with, why does sustainability matter? So in one sentence, who wants to go?
I'll start us off. So
yeah, all right.
To me, I think that it's the future. Without it, we won't have anything. We won't be able to live the way that we do currently. So that's my one sentence.
I think a lot of people live for the now, for the moment, so I think getting the right message across about sustainability, like Antonia said, will help the future, and we'll have what we've got now in 100-200 years. So getting that right message across,
it matters to try and ensure that we have enough resources to fulfill the needs of today. We need to innovate, we need to create new things, we need to build new things, but then it's whilst maintaining enough for future needs so they can sustain and they can live in a world that they need to, basically.
great.
Yep. So essential for the future health of the planet.
Yeah, kind of a biggie. And then, you know, that's the kind of big, you know, blue sky thinking reasons for sustainability. But then in terms of the practical, smaller, everyday things we can do, what do you think is the most effective thing? Whether it's a small thing you could do every day or something which is a little bit bigger, what would you say to that?
I would say reducing pollution. So, you know, take the walk to the shops, don't get the car, get the train somewhere instead of driving. I think not only is it reducing pollution, it's actually like mental health as well. You know, you're getting fit, you're going for a walk. So I think, yeah, I'm going to start walking, running. I love running, so I might start running to the shops. yeah.
Running to the shops. First up.
No, reduction in pollution.
Yeah. Okay, and then Harry?
Yeah, I'd want to say very much the same.
We'll run to the shop together.
So sociable as well.
Yeah.
There we are, it's just growing.
In not using the car.
So the same, and just trying to think about recycling. Everybody, most things now, I know, like plastics, they can be recycled, or quite a lot of brands are using recyclable plastic. So just think about, not just because it's plastic doesn't mean it has to go in one bin. It can be recycled, and I know it is a bit tedious of you have to keep separate containers, separate parts, has to go in a separate bin, but that little bit of effort,
behaviour change
can add up and reduce just your waste, and if so many people do it, it will reduce more, basically.
Great, so we've had recycling, we've had running to the shops, reducing our pollution.
I'll do it once and I'll be like, oh my God.
Not again.
Yeah, you'll get a reputation at all the shops. Like, oh, here she is again. But then again, if you both go together, you know, strengthen solidarity.
You might get a team, a running team.
Yeah. Oh, there comes the crazy runners again.
Heard it here first, starting in Birmingham, going out nationwide.
There we go.
Antonia, what would be your sort of main effective tip?
I think my biggest tip is do something. It doesn't really matter what that is. If recycling is something that you've never done before and you think that that's something that you would quite like to do, do it. If that's not flying on holiday but taking the train, do that. I think it's doing something that you think will be manageable, that you think that is interesting. I think having a reason behind it and keeps you being motivated. I don't think there's any point in saying to people, you know, don't use plastic straws anymore if that's not what you do, or if that's going to be something that's very difficult for you to do. So I think, just do something, anything. All changes, you know, as long as it's something good, then all small change adds up to make really big differences. And if it's something you can stick with, that impact's going to last longer.
And touching upon big differences, if you could sit down with the world's leaders, what would you say to them? That is the final out of our sustainability quickfire round.
Such a hard one.
You got 2 minutes with, I don't know, Trump.
Oh, gosh.
Go.
Well,
okay, all right. Or someone who's going to listen about sustainability, so I'll caveat that.
I think I'd kind of ask them, like, what they're doing personally. You know, these world leaders can, you know, discuss these matters for the world and try to put the right message across, but if they're not singing off the same hymn sheet and doing it themselves, then why are they even talking about it? So I think I'd ask them, like, what personal measures are they taking? You know, something really little, like Antonia touched on. Are they doing those little bits as well? Because, like, every little helps, and I don't think they've got to practice what they preach.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
I think that would also make good sort of news story. I remember David Cameron getting his trainers from reused, I think it was firemen's suits or something. They're really cool trainers as well. And I just remember that being picked out. And that was clearly a small thing which you learnt about, you know, an intimate detail, I suppose.
Because, I mean, with the press and the media these days, you know, you can be the hero or you can be hero to zero, you know. And I think if the world leaders are actively doing something good themselves, you know, people have that trust. They kind of think, yeah, do you know what? They're giving it a go. I might do the same. Mm. So yeah, that's my discussion.
Yeah. Right. So that's the first item on the agenda. Who'd like to go next?
I would say more. You say a lot of stuff on all the politics shows and all the world leading organisations and all the meetings and stuff. But will anything actually happen? Like, you're doing little bits here and there, trying to sort of the housing shortage, or you've put more money in the budget for flood defences, but will we actually see that, or is it just words to make us think that you're going to do that, yeah, so we can vote for you next time to get back into Parliament, or
bit of persuasion
are we actually going to see a difference, are we actually going to see something or documented?
So it's asking for the actions to follow the words. That would be the main thing. Mm-hmm. I think if all the words which had been said was followed through, then we probably wouldn't have many problems in the world, would we? But there we go. And then Antonia.
I thought that was a really hard question. So I was at an event on Saturday and they were kind of asking us, what is your favourite sustainable development goal that you've been talking about? And I think that's kind of what I thought of with this. So my favourite two, I suppose, are that kind of education and equal opportunity to education for all, but also that peace, justice and strong institutions. And I think that fundamentally we have too many people who have too much and too many people who don't have enough. And I think if we remember that everybody is human and kind of think on a fundamental level that we all should have the same access to, you know, healthcare, education, that all opportunities should be open to everybody and not just the few. I think that that's a kind of huge way that we can step forward, although very idealistic, I know. But I think that kind of idea of having, everybody having an equal opportunity to do things and not having a kind of surplus of people who are constantly struggling. Yeah.
I think that's, that'd be great if they did listen to that. We all can. So, and I'm, listening to your answer there, Antonia, in my head, I was thinking of the Labour thing. So any Labour listeners would be going for the many when you were saying about not just the few as well. So, interesting what slogans do and how they stick in your mind. And then just to finish off on some really random questions very quickly. Aside from digging deeper, what's your favourite podcast?
My favourite podcast is The Guilty Feminist, I have to admit. So funny and relatable, but also keeps that fire in your belly to change the world. So, yes, that's my favourite.
To listen to that one. I've started listening to Fern Carton's podcast, Happy Place. So she's got loads and loads of episodes, and she basically interviews celebrities and non-celebrities and kind of how they got through hard times, mental health, how celebrities adapt the spotlight, and people who've been in accidents, how they've recovered from that. And I think 45 minutes, and I sit there and I'm like, wow, that person's been through a lot, and it always ends on a positive note as well. So I'm gonna continue listening to Fern Carton's podcast.
Great. Inspirational podcast.
To be honest, I don't listen to podcasts. I'll listen to this one. But
so one vote for Digging Deeper. Brilliant.
No, probably after this, I'll probably have a look at a few, maybe listen to a few. But no, I don't, never really got into podcasts or watching. I say watching, listening to to podcasts, really, to be honest.
If you're on a run. If you're running to the shop,
you
just get your
podcast. On the run, just have to find one.
I could listen to this in 6 months and go, oh, I did say I was going to start running.
Oh, exactly, so it could be our first listens. The second one, I know, Antonia, you were saying that you had a bit of difficulty with this one. Who is your hero, if you indeed have a hero?
I was just scared of being really cheesy. I feel like Greta's the only kind of one that comes to mind for a sustainability podcast.
It's on brand.
Yeah. Kind of, she's doing exactly what I'm aiming to do in the office, I suppose, on a bigger, more inspirational scale. But she just, she kind of goes for things full on. She said she wasn't going to fly, and, she gets in solar panel boats and all of that, which is, I think we should all kind of take a leaf out of that and not necessarily
and buy solar panel boats.
Yeah, maybe not all.
Just get a catalogue.
That one looks nice.
But just she just kind of does things beyond what's expected, and I think that's...
I think what's amazing about Greta was all of a sudden, Twitter, the news, it was like, Greta. I was like, Greta? So what is this? So you had a read and you're like, wow, she's actually you know, started talking about something, confronted people who have the power, and people are like, wow, she's kind of right in a sense, you know. I think how she's influenced a lot of people, whether people agree or disagree, how she's done that is is quite,
and to be so
cool.
young,
yeah,
and
yeah.
to be fearless when
yeah.
talking to world leaders,
yeah,
is yeah, I definitely couldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't particularly like talking to a room full of people,
yeah,
to be honest. So, yeah, she's pretty inspiring, that's for sure. I mean, is that a second vote for Greta,
no,
Rebecca?
Well,
or?
Yeah. I did think, because it's all about sustainability, but I was just going to be really cliche and, you know, my parents, you know, I came out of college, went into work, and then I thought, you know, I want a career change, and they kind of stood by me and was like, yeah, just go for it, you know. You've got a roof over your head, you've got, you know, work down the road, just go for it. So, yeah. Okay.
I hope they listen to this.
My mum might, my dad would blow.
Maybe just get that little segment and
yeah,
play it to you. Say.
But say, I mentioned you.
Yeah, broadcast to the world. And Harry?
I'll say not so much a person, just more people in terms of like people like Albert Einstein, Richard Branson, people that have disabilities like myself. They both had dyslexia and prove that dyslexia doesn't stop you from doing anything. Richard Branson, he has, well, anything named Virgin Radio, Virgin Atlantic, he has his name on everything, and Albert Einstein, he's left his mark on the world to forever and a day now, basically, and it's really inspired me to not let that disability hold me back and not let anybody hold anybody back. It's just something you have, and there is ways of going around it, and it doesn't, it closes a couple of doors, but many more open for you, and many more can open in the future and progress your career or progress wherever you want to go, basically.
Great. So three really great sets of heroes, I would say, there. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do a balloon sort of competition thing. I don't know if you ever did that at school, but it was you had to vouch for your person, because there'd only be one person left on the balloon.
Oh.
That was the hot air balloon kind of thing. So, yeah, I wouldn't like to put those three all together. might get a ring on the doorbell from your parents if that was the case. So, and last one is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? So it might have actually come from your parents, Rebecca, I don't know. But, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, not just my parents, but... funny enough, colleagues that I worked with when I decided to have this career change, you know, all my friends, you know, they were all saying, you know, it might be a couple of steps back now, but once you finish your degree and you've got experience at work, you'll be, you know, 10 steps further on. So I just think, you know, just go for it. Like, life's too short. Just take the jump and just go for it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if it works, great, it works. But it's never too late to make that change. So, yeah.
Great. Okay. Harry?
I would probably say if you truly believe in something, just keep going for it. As if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Like, you don't know how close you are until you get it, so don't give up. You could be a couple of meters away and you walk away, but how did you know it was a couple of meters away until you keep going and sort of always learning from.
We'll keep going into final year.
Yeah,
but not too far away.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Always sort of learning from mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but you've got. Take it from it and take it on the chin and move on. You can't really change the past, but you can change the future. So you did something wrong there. If you ever have that situation again, you know what to adapt to and what to do, really.
Yeah.
Right. And best piece of advice you've ever received, Antonia?
Bit of a weird one, mostly from Responsible Futures. But don't push at a closed door. Don't waste your time and your energy on people who are completely shut down to the ideas that you're coming to them with. If they're not on board, it's not worth the time, and rather go for people who are either sitting on the fence, who haven't quite made up their mind yet, or get the people on board that are already on board, because that's, you know, once things, and I've definitely seen it in the office, once things become a bit of a trend and everybody else is
people
starting
jump on
to
the
do things,
they?
Then people start to feel like they're missing out on something or like there's something more exciting that they could be doing, and that's when that door kind of opens a little bit, and that's the time to be... to kind of encourage and support, rather than when they're just completely closed off to the idea altogether. So.
People are a bit subjected to change, aren't they?
Yeah.
But if they think, oh, well, they're doing it, so give it a go.
I think it's a big one in sustainability.
Yeah.
Kind of often people feel like you're preaching too much, about, you know, there's so many ways to be sustainable, and mm-hmm. if people are doing some things, or, you know, is it the right thing? And if we push too much to people that just don't kind of haven't tuned into it yet, then it can seem really big and daunting, and can actually have the opposite effect to kind of just giving them time to come right to things.
That kind of psych of the teacher and being told to do things is something which I think is kind of a something we all have, isn't it? So I think once people, I mean, and again going back to that brilliant conversation I had with Brian, but he was going on about, you know, he shows the students the clip of on YouTube, I think 3 seconds video, which talks about how humanity has been on the planet 3 seconds in a day in terms of how long the Earth has been here, mm-hmm. and showing what the destruction, also the great things which humanity has done since it's been here on this, you know, that comparatively short time, but also the destructive things. Yeah. And I think, you know, he was saying when people see that, they're suddenly a lot more engaged and... So I think there's a lot to be said for that, and the more, whether it's listening to, you know, a really interesting podcast, or, you know, watching a video, or just thinking I'm gonna do what next door's doing and take my stuff down to recycling, then it's all making a difference, and hopefully meaning that the world will spin round for millennia more. Let's hope. So thank you all for your time. I know you've had a very long day already, and I've taken up more of your time, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And I hope everyone who has listened has enjoyed what they've had here. Some ideas to ponder. Run to the shops, I think, is the main one. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Digging Deeper. To keep up to date with all the latest goings on at UCEM, follow us on our social media channels. And don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes.